It's the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. Coming in 3, 2, 1.
Listening to the NASA Lunar Science Institute podcast, which highlights the latest news and information of the Moon, on the Moon, and from the Moon. It's produced by the NASA Lunar Science Institute at the Ames Research Center in Moffett Field, California.
It's a showdown, the Moon versus Mars. Hi, this is Nancy Atkinson for the NASA Lunar Science Institute. The Moon and Mars are two very different planetary bodies, but there's one thing the two have very much in common. Both are covered with craters. So how do the two compare in the crater department? With us to give us some blow-by-blow insight is Stuart Robbins, a researcher at the University of Colorado Boulder, and he's also at the Southwest Research Institute, and he also works with the Moon Mapper Citizen Science Project. Thanks for joining us, Stuart.
And thanks for having me.
Well, you are a crater kind of guy, as you study craters on both the Moon and Mars, and I thought it would be interesting to compare and contrast these two kind of extremely cratered planetary bodies. First of all, can you tell us about your crater studies that you do for the Moon?
Yeah, so my lunar crater research is focused on work with the CosmoQuest Moon Mappers project that you'd mentioned. So this is a citizen science portal that asks users from around the world, among many other things, to identify and measure small craters. And when I say small craters here, I'm talking about ones that are anywhere from about 20 meters across, so like the size of maybe a living room in a house, to maybe a kilometer across. And these sizes limit what we can study, but they help us to focus on just a few areas of scientific research. And so with these small craters, my particular interest is understanding two different things. One of them is understanding secondary craters. Secondary craters are craters that form from ejecta blocks that are actually launched out when another crater forms. And so these are known about, but we still don't really know many details about them and how they may contaminate the primary crater population. So that's one thing that I'm interested in. Another one on the Moon is I'm interested in fine-tuning some of the chronology. So the chronology is we have these rock samples that we brought back from Apollo and that the Soviet Luna spacecraft returned from the Moon, and we know the ages of these rocks, and what we do is we want to correlate those ages to a certain number of craters per unit area. And this research was done back in the 70s and 60s, but it hasn't really been looked at again since that time, so that's another thing that I'm trying to do.
Okay. And on the Mars side, you've recently had a paper published on the studies you've done on counting the craters of Mars. Could you tell us briefly about that research?
Yeah, so this was, I can tell you briefly about it, but it took about 7 years. This was basically my thesis work for my PhD.
So
I created the largest crater database that exists for any single planet. This was something that I did by basically drawing circles for 5 or 6 years. There are 635,000 craters in there altogether, with about 385,000 that are larger than a kilometer. The other 250,000, for those keeping count, are just in there to make sure that I was actually complete for all of my 1 kilometer larger craters. So then what I did was I used this to basically, again, going back to redoing previous studies, I used it to redo some of the very basic relationships that we thought we knew about for craters. So one of the very basic things is how deep do craters get when they form? And I used this database to remeasure that, and I got different results from what had previously been done, but I used new instrument data, and so I mean, I like to think that my results are better than what's been previously done. But you know, of course, it's just an incremental result from what's been done previously. We also used the database to do things like I mentioned secondary craters. So I had two papers out where the database shows these large streamers of secondary craters emanating from one large crater. I also had a paper on secondary craters that are just these giant fields of secondary surrounding a single large primary crater, not in large streamers a quarter of the way across the planet, but just in close. And so you can do a lot of different things. Another thing that I'm involved in with this database is age dating surfaces. So the basic idea with age dating is that if you have more craters somewhere, then it's older because it has had more time to accumulate those craters. And so that's just sort of a smattering of some of the different things that I've done with this database and will continue to be doing as long as I have funding, at least.
All right. Well, yeah, that all sounds really interesting. So, well, why is studying craters so important for these two different worlds?
Well, there are three basic categories of research that you can do with craters. One of them is age dating, as I mentioned already. Another is that craters are what we'd like to call a poor man's drill. We can't easily go to the moon, and we haven't been able to yet send an astronaut to anywhere other than the moon. And so what craters do is they basically excavate a hole. I mean, a crater can be thought of as a bomb. You've dropped a giant, high energetic thing, and it's exploded and created this big hole in the ground. And so we can send rovers there, and we have sent rovers there to basically explore the different layers that are revealed in the side of the crater wall. That's why when the Mars Exploration Rover Opportunity landed in a crater, they weren't saying, oh, darn, we got in a big hole. It was, oh, yay, we're now in a hole. We can look at these different layers. And so that's another good thing about craters. And the other is basic impact physics. So something that a lot of people don't know is that scientists who studied craters in the 1950s and 60s were also employed by the U.S. Department of Defense if they were in the United States, because they were employed by the U.S. Department of Defense if they were in the United States, because that was basically what bombs are. So it was, if we drop something that is a certain energy, what is the explosion going to look like? What kind of a hole is it going to dig? And so those are sort of the three basic categories of research as to why it's important to study these across different planets and different moons. It's because each body is different, and it can tell us different things about the local environment and about what happens to these craters and these other features. So, for example, Mars, it has heavy erosion because of an atmosphere, well, heavy relative to the moon, for example. So it has erosion, it has water history, and it has different surface characteristics and gravity from the moon. The moon and Mars are also in different locations in the solar system, so they have had somewhat of a different impact history throughout their entire lifetime, for about 4.5 billion years or so. So the moon, it has no atmosphere. It's a different environment. We've been there, so we know a little bit more on-the-ground calibration for its craters. And it's also right next to us. You know, it's relatively close as far as distances are concerned in the solar system. And so the moon has also recorded Earth's impact history, whereas Mars is a little more different.
Okay. Well, what is perhaps the biggest difference between craters on the moon versus craters on Mars?
Probably the fact that Mars has something of an atmosphere, and so Martian craters will experience infilling, erosion, resurfacing, all those things that we get on Earth, but to a lesser degree on Mars, but to pretty much no degree on the moon. And so on Mars, the craters are relatively quickly modified, whereas on the moon, a crater can look pristine and fresh and have these nice sharp rims and other features a billion years after it forms, whereas on Mars, it's not going to last that long with those still sharp features.
Okay. Well, could you talk about the different ways of how impacts could change local environments on both of these worlds?
Well, to first order, basically an impact event is going to erase everything that is underneath it. So anything that was at the location of where that crater now is going to be gone. Larger impacts are going to throw out more ejecta, and so they're going to erase things that are within about one crater diameter of the rim itself. To first extent, it's just going to remove what had been there before. It's going to effectively reset the surface. What craters will also do is they create impact melt. So this is where, this is a large high energy explosion effectively. And so you're going to melt some of the rock And so you'll have this, what we call a melt sheet that forms within the crater. You're also going to, as I mentioned before, form ejecta, so that's going to cover areas around it. And on Mars, at least early on, if you're talking about environment and changing the environment, when Mars did have water, and a little bit later when it has frozen water below the surface, if you had a large enough impact, maybe tens of kilometers across, then you could actually create a microenvironment where you could have, you know, a stable water system and possibly life for on the order of about 100,000 years.
Well, most of the craters that you and your colleagues study usually have to be of a certain size. Is in order to study them, they really have to be big enough for you to see them via remote sensing. How important is it to study the smaller ones, too?
Well, it really all depends on what you want to do. So different size craters will let you do different things. Like, so if we go back to those three basic categories of research, if we wanted to start with age dating, bigger craters are better for age dating because they're harder to erase and there's less chance that they're a secondary crater. But with age dating, smaller craters are also better because there are more of them, and so you have better statistics, and they can be used over smaller areas because there are more smaller craters. So it's sort of a toss-up of what you want to do there. With the poor man's drill, a different size crater will get you to a different depth. So if you have a 1 kilometer diameter crater, then you're only going to be able to sample stuff maybe 100 to 200 meters deep. A 100 kilometer crater across is going to get you maybe closer to 5 to 7 kilometers deep. And so you're going to be able to look at different things in different areas. With the impact physics, that actually changes somewhat when you change size. So small, maybe 1 to 5 kilometer craters on Mars will behave differently and form differently than, say, 10 to 50 kilometer craters on Mars. On the Moon, that transition is closer to about 15 kilometers. And so the physics will change with these different sized impacts. And so when we study the different sizes, we can learn more about that and more about the basic physics, which corresponds to a lot of different physics that we'd like to know about, such as fluid mechanics, because when you heat a rock to that high temperature or you have that high of energy explosion, then rocks will start to behave like a fluid. And so we can use hydrocode or fluid mechanics codes to understand the physics of the way these form, and then we can go back and forth between what's actually there, what we observe, and what the models say, and change the models. So you can also understand with the impact physics local versus regional versus global consequences. So, you know, we need to know at a basic level, if we see a 2-meter asteroid pass really close by Earth, if that's going to hit us, is that going to cause a global catastrophe? And the answer is no, a 2-meter-sized asteroid is not going to do that. But is, say, a 100-meter-sized asteroid going to do that? Or do we only need to worry about the 1-kilometer-sized asteroids causing that kind of global or even regional catastrophe? And so all of these different things can be studied by studying different size craters.
Okay. Well, so I guess the takeaway about all of this is that without studying craters, our understanding of both the Moon and Mars and as well as Earth could be vastly different.
Oh, yeah. I mean, craters are really the main thing that will reshape and reform the solid surfaces in the solar system other than Earth and possibly Venus and possibly Io. But otherwise, for every solid surface in the solar system, craters are the main process that will resurface them. And so understanding the crater population tells us a lot more about the surfaces of these objects because they are a major part of the surface.
Okay. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot here because we are kind of pitting the Moon against Mars here. So which do you think has been most interesting for you to study?
Well, I just got started with the Moon, so it's really not a fair comparison. I like the Moon because the Moon is somewhat easier. The Moon doesn't have an atmosphere. On Mars, things get 100 times more complicated because it has an atmosphere. So in that sense, Mars can be more interesting, but it makes it much harder as well. So that might be why more people study Mars than the Moon at the moment.
Okay, great. Well, thanks, Stuart Robbins, for joining us today and giving us some insight about craters on both the Moon and Mars.
Anytime. Thanks.
To find out more about this topic, visit our website at www.lunarscience.nasa.gov. Any opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of NASA or the NASA Lunar Science Institute. This podcast is produced for educational and information purposes only. On behalf of the NASA Lunar Science Institute, thanks for listening. This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy was sponsored anonymously and dedicated to the International Dark Sky Association, www.darksky.org.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.